you got to make sure your title work is ready and that you know that other than the mortgage getting foreclosed on, that it's free and clear. And if any of you really want to do that, don't buy anything above about 60% of fair market value, because you're going to have problems.
Your network is your net worth. Come listen to some of the most successful people I know share invaluable knowledge, stories, and advice in real estate, business, and beyond. This is Weiss Advice. Whether you want to take your business or personal life to the next level, look no further.
Welcome back to another episode of Weiss Advice. I'm your host, Yona Weiss. Excited to be here today with Casey Miracle. Casey, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Yona. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. And I think this is actually making history because, believe it or not, you are the first person, I believe, I may be mistaken, but first person that I am interviewing who I've met on Twitter. Retweet. So those of you who may not know, a few months ago, I started becoming active on the Twitter app, and it's just been incredible meeting so many people through that. Casey is one of those people who I've begun following and enjoying his content and banter, among other great minds out there. So I just appreciate you coming on the show.
Man, I'm fired up to be here and looking forward to chatting with you. So,
well, it's a pleasure. So for our listeners who may not know who you are, I'd love for you to give just kind of a little background on, you know, what's your story? How'd you get started in real estate?
Sure. 809, I started buying foreclosures on the courthouse steps, single family stuff. It's kind of a shark pit. Don't do that if you don't know what you're doing. I was flipping houses and I was sitting there one day and I just married my wife and she was pregnant. And I was like, well, how do I make more money and not, you know, not work so hard? And so that led me down a long and winding path. So went from flipping foreclosure houses, which was really easy, to buying notes, mortgages, right? Did that for a while, then got into creative financing of all kinds. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that. And then transition, not necessarily transition, because that's not out of my system yet. But from there, I went to hard money lending and then, you know, commercial deals a couple years ago. So that's kind of the progression, if you will.
Okay. So you went, I mean, it sounds like you jumped into the deep end. I mean, you call it like the shark pit, but going and in 2008, 2009, when there were tons of foreclosures happening and you were buying those from the courthouse steps, which is something that I wouldn't recommend. I've been there. I've done that. Yeah. Not in those years, but it's not the thing you want to be spending your time doing if you're not really committed.
Yeah, you can make a six-figure mistake pretty easily. And I remember like one of the first ones I ever bought, I remember showing up to the courthouse steps and no one else was there, you know? And so I'm bidding, you know, I don't know, six figures on this house. And I'm saying to myself, is no one here because this is a bad deal? Or is no one here just because everybody's run out of money? I'm not sure which one, you know, and there's no safety net. So if you don't know what you're doing,
right?
Foreclosures.
Yeah. I mean, part of the problem is you're not even allowed to, you know, check the properties. You're not allowed to do an appraisal or even see the properties kind of sight unseen, just buying it based on the address. Maybe you can drive by or something like that, but that's pretty much it. You don't know if there are squatters in there. You don't know, you know, if there's tax lien, like there's so many things that can go wrong.
Yeah, you got to make sure your title work is ready and that you know that other than the mortgage getting foreclosed on, that it's free and clear. And if any of you really want to do that, don't buy anything above about 60% of fair market value, because you're going to have problems. So
that's pretty safe. I appreciate that. Now, you mentioned you did from that transition to doing creative financing, and I've seen you talk about this a lot, and also buying notes, which are two, you know, somewhat related, but different subjects.
Sure.
Tell me, you know, if you have any stories or anything like that, just some of the deals that you've done or some creative strategies that you think people really don't know about that maybe they could and should.
Sure. Well, there's kind of two sides to real estate. There's a debt side and an equity side, you know. Equity side is just buying properties with cash or getting a loan, right? And the debt side is the loan, essentially, right?
So financing the property, yeah.
Yeah, financing, essentially, right? So only thing so far that I've ever lost money on is non-performing second mortgages, which you can buy for pennies on the dollar. And let's see. So I bought two years and years ago, and I should have bought 20, but I was like, I'll dip my toe in the water. They did not work out. I tried to foreclose because the people weren't paying. That's what non-performing means. Performing means paying. Non-performing means not paying. And I got a quick lesson in humility that I'm still living through now. But as far as the creative aspect, yeah, I'm into all kinds of crazy and kinky stuff in the real estate world, if you will. You know, notes, options, just deal structuring in a million different ways, seller financing, if you will. And so as far as a story, like one thing that I really like to do, and I don't do it that much anymore, but as far as non-performing mortgages go, I like to buy non-performing mortgages because usually you can get a non-performing mortgage for 50 cents on the dollar, right? So if, let's say somebody has a $100,000 mortgage, you might be able to pick that up for 50,000, maybe 10,000. I mean, but let's say 50,000. You talk with the borrower, you get it back performing. Usually you can structure the deal where their payments are lower, right? Mm-hmm. And you can get them back on track. And then I like to trade those at par or for full value. Let's say, you know, I wait a year, I get that person working again, you know, the payments working again. And then I like to go trade those at par for properties, right? So I might go trade that, you know, that note might be again worth $100,000, and I might go trade that in a deal for $100,000. Well, you don't have to beat up the seller that much if you've already got a 50% discount built in. Right. So yeah, that's a little trick that not many people know about, but I mean, you can even do that on a commercial level, and it's really nice if you can get that to happen. So
yeah. Where does one even go about finding non-performing notes to buy? I mean, are you buying these directly from banks or from private lenders?
Yeah, both of those. I mean, there's note brokers, there's hedge funds that sell them. Like, again, you'll probably see a theme for me. I'm opportunistic, if you will. I like big yields and I cannot lie. So it's riskier stuff, right? So, but you got to, you know, buyer beware. You got to figure out how to do it. But yeah, I mean, I'll buy performing notes too. I like performing notes better. And I like them in first position more than I like them in second position, to be quite honest with you. But, you know, if you want to buy at a steep discount, that's one way to do it. So,
and you can't always pick and choose. I mean, opportunities come up. I mean, again, you mentioned going to note brokers or seeing, I'm sure like everyone, you're looking at tons of deals all the time and just seeing what pencils out the best and what, you know, what you have an opportunity to take over.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and, you know, the cool thing about the debt markets is if you can actually negotiate with the borrower on the other side, a lot of times you can pretty easily yield 20, 30% or more just by rearranging, you know, their payments or the term or the interest rate. Yeah. And it's sometimes pretty easy. Like some people want to pay more on their mortgage. Sometimes they hate debt. They're like, oh, right. Well, I can pay, you know, $200 more because my mortgage is at 3% and I make a lot more money, you know?
Right.
So, but what just happened is boom, you know, you might be making an extra 30% on that deal. So it's financial calculator is something that I would implore people to, to figure out how to use. So
yeah, learn how to use that. I mean, not everyone is built like that to figure out or to understand how to underwrite or how to figure out different scenarios of how to structure a deal. But I'm curious, you mentioned something in passing, buying options in real estate. Like,
yeah,
what does that mean? Can you give me a couple scenarios of what that actually looks like? I'm not so familiar with that term, like sure. Buying options in real estate. And I'm sure our listeners also may be curious.
Yeah. So I'm kind of blasé fair in the way I use it, but an option is just a contingent contract. So think of any commercial or residential deal you have. Usually there's an inspection clause, right? Mm-hmm. So the sale is contingent upon an inspection, right? So that's a contingency. Options are kind of a unilateral instead of a bilateral agreement. So in an option, you might still have that inspection contingency, right? But it says, hey, I'm going to put up some kind of consideration. So consideration could be anything. Typically it's money, right? So I come to you, Yona, you've got $1 million property. I say, hey, Yona, I'm going to rezone this land you have. It's not worth anything if I can't get it rezoned to me. I'm going to give you $100,000. I want you to give me, 2 years to do it. If I don't come back, you keep my $100,000, sell it to somebody else. If I do come back, then we agreed on $1 million. You just take the $100,000 off my purchase price. So now I owe you $900,000. I'll go get it rezoned and you don't have to deal with that. Right. So, but the difference in a regular contract is usually there's an earnest money deposit that's refundable, right? Mm-hmm. And an option, that option consideration really isn't refundable. You're saying, hey, if it works out, great. If it doesn't, great. I've got the obligation to buy from you, but I don't have to buy from you. I've got the right, but not the obligation, right? Excuse me. I've got the right, but not the obligation to buy. That's it.
And so okay, I get that. I get that as an option or as a consideration inside the contract, but how do you go about buying something like that? Like, meaning you're going and taking over the contract from someone else. Is that what you mean? Who has some sort of option like that?
No, I usually just go try to make an agreement with somebody anyway. Like
I see.
I'm trying to solve a problem, right? Because mm-hmm. I'm opportunistic. So again, I like big yields. So, let's say, for instance, right now I'm working on a storage facility because I own some storage facilities. And I've got a gentleman that wants to sell, but he doesn't want to pay as much taxes. And he wants to, he's getting up there in age and he's thinking, okay, I want to give some money to my heirs, right? So we're going to do like a lease with an option to buy, right? And so I'm going to pay him so much money, right, for 10 years. We agreed upon a price, $2.5 million. He was at three, I was at two. We came to the middle and I've got to pay him, $130,000 a year for 10 years. And if he dies sometime in that time frame, then we've got I'm going to pre-sign three notes to his three heirs. They'll get a step up in basis. So, it'll be tax-free to them, which I know you like. And I'm not actually going to have to buy it. So I don't have to go get necessarily I don't have to go to a bank or a lender and get the financing. He's essentially going to finance it for me.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So, that's a pretty creative way to do it. And you already have all that pre kind of written out in the agreement.
Yeah. Well, I have my own agreement, right? But typically I say, hey, who's your attorney? Who's your lawyer? Let's go see them and let's work this out. Like every deal is different. I can hand them a sheet of paper, but it's, it probably doesn't encompass everything that they want.
Of course. I mean, there's always negotiations going on in any type of deal. Hopefully there's negotiations going on somewhat because each party has different interests in mind, right? Sure. You're chasing big yields, as you said, and you don't know necessarily what the seller is chasing. They may be just looking for some cash. They may be looking for stability. They may just not want the headache of dealing with the tenants that they're currently, chasing every day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a good one is if you're into the single family game, right? How do you get an option? Well, there's a kid in the house, right? Well, we don't want to leave the school district. Oh, okay. Well, let me give you a little money now. We'll agree to today's price. Okay. I'll get an option for, how long until he or she is out of high school? Oh, well, that's 8 years. Okay. We'll do an 8-year option. I'll buy it when they leave. Let's lock in today's price. So that's important. You can try to lock in today's price. Don't argue about the price. You don't need to argue about the price. Argue about payments if you're going to argue about anything. Low payments or just a single payment. A lot of times you can say, hey, here's, $5,000, $10,000, $100,000, however big the deal is, right? And it can be a one-time payment. So, yeah.
Fascinating. And Casey, you're based, just for a little more context, you're based out of the Midwest, right? You're in Missouri. Yeah. Is that correct?
I'm in Missouri. Yeah. Springfield, Missouri.
Missouri. Awesome. So are you doing deals in state, out of state, which markets, kind of mostly focused on?
Yes. America. Land of the free, home of the brave. I mean, I've got plenty of stuff here, but I buy all over the country. I'm pretty asset class agnostic. I don't really like hospitality. I don't have connections for retail, but man, just about anything else. If I haven't bought it, I've thought about it. So, yeah, I don't
know. All right, so I'm going to ask you two questions now. I'd love to hear a story about like just a nightmare deal. And then I'm going to ask you about like a grand slam deal.
Okay, a nightmare. Let's see. So, well, I tweeted about this. I bought a storage facility, I don't know, a couple of years ago. I would say it's a double. I don't really like doubles that much, but I bought it. I did all my normal due diligence, and I wish it was better, right? I should have negotiated harder. So I did my due diligence. I got bank statements. I got tax returns. I got all the regular stuff, okay? The owner said it was full. I went and drove the place. There was a lock on every unit. I'm looking through his bank statements. I'm looking through his tax returns, right? Everything looks fine. And, you know, if people cheat on their tax returns, then, you know, that's...
You can't do anything about that. Okay? You can't.
But he had actually multiple businesses in the same account, right? So he told me it was full. Mm. It was 70% full. And there really wasn't a way for me to tell. All I see is deposit, deposit, deposit. You know, I'm running the numbers. I'm like, oh, well, this... You know, the income makes sense for what we're paying for it, right? So we close and I find out it's really 70% full, right? And had like, I don't know how much more I could do to make it work. Like tax returns and bank statements tell a story, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I could sue the guy, but I don't really like suing people.
Right. I mean, there weren't like rent rolls, like showing.
Yeah, he had a rent roll, but it's one of those deals where like the rent roll is by hand, right?
Sure.
Now, on one hand, that's huge opportunity. On the other hand, it might be a nightmare, right? So, you know, we open up these units and find out 30% of them don't make sense now or aren't full. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I've made $1 million mistake here, right? I've overpaid this person, which I'm not that happy about, but I bought it so savagely low that it matters, but it does, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, it's still a double. Like, if it was totally full, it'd be a home run. But we've gone a year now. It's a year and a half. It's like an 85%. So it's close now. And am I a little upset about that? Yes. Have I been misled? Probably. Do I still think I got a pretty good deal? Like, you know, I'm one of those people who kind of, you got to step back sometimes and you say, okay, you know, did it still work out? Yeah, it still worked out. So
it doesn't sound too much like a nightmare, honestly.
Well,
I mean, I'm sure while you're going through it.
I didn't like $1 million back in my pocket, though. You know, like I got an LP in the deal and I didn't do him wrong, right? But I had to go have a conversation with them about it. So,
right. No, I hear that. That's never good. Obviously, you were misled. There was things you could never have really known about unless, you know, you had a contingency to inspect all the units or something like that.
And it's kind of hard in storage because people don't like have their own individual locks. They don't, you know, nobody's going to open up every unit for you. Yeah. It's just, it's a mess.
So, right.
But it worked out. I mean, yeah. So I got lucky. So just buy low and you'll probably be okay.
Probably okay. And in the end of the day, I mean, you have a piece of real estate, which is, you know, still at the very least it's there. It's land. It's a deal.
Yeah, it's cash flowing. It's good. Yeah. So on the other end of the spectrum, let's see. We'll do a storage themed deal. We can title this storage, I guess.
I guess so. Yeah.
I bought a property locally that was half full, was at 60% of market rents, that had additional land. I mean, it's one of those deals where during COVID, the guy wanted to sell. He was 80 years old, didn't want to deal with it anymore. You know, we took the thing from, I don't know, it was making $14,000 a month, and now it's making $35,000-$40,000 a month. So, you know, and how did I do that? I just cold called everybody in the world until somebody told me yes. And that was a cash deal. There was nothing fancy about that. So
is that how you find most of your deals? I mean, is it through cold calling or over the years building relationships with brokers?
Yeah. So most of my deals that I do individually is cold calling, but I'm doing more and more deals with brokers. You know, moving into the commercial space a couple of years ago, brokers are the key to getting deals. So you've got to play ball, but it's harder to play ball with brokers when you are super opportunistic and need high and love a high yield, right? So, because, you know, a good you know, a good deal to a broker might be 10% off fair market value. And a good deal for me, it feels like 50. But, you know, that's where creative financing comes in. And that's where sometimes you can bridge the gap. So
very, very true. I mean, there are opportunities out there. I mean, you mentioned storage a bunch of times. That's what you've done. But you've done single family, multifamily, office, yep, land. I mean, other types of deals. Is there any one that you kind of, is there time to time, or do you go through phases and like, okay, let me just focus right now on buying land. Let me just focus right now on industrial deals. Like, are there phases you go through, or is just like, let's just call the whole book?
No. Well, so I'm opportunistic, right? If the money is right, I'll probably do it, right? But I would say there's seasons to investing. And I believe this in my bones, right? So, you know, as you know, right now, office is the asset class that nobody wants to have, right? And industrial is super hot, right? And so I've spent, you know, 15 or so years just moving from thing to thing, because, you know, cap rate's just an NOI division, you know, like now, am I as good as specialist at certain things? No, absolutely not, right? But can they structure a deal like me? Probably not either, you know, some can. Yeah. So it's seasonality, right? And so, you know, right now, like a couple of weeks ago, I was trying to buy 3 office condos. I hate office condos. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me why I would get an office condo other than I was getting good financing, good walkable financing. And I planned on buying those condos. And then if it's filling up the one vacancy and then immediately selling those condos and then taking that great financing and walking it over to another property and taking all of that cash and putting it in my pocket and not paying off that mortgage, which is pretty cool. So
makes sense.
Yeah.
What's a walkable financing? Can you just describe that for our listeners who may not be familiar with that term?
Yeah. So walkable financing, or substitution of collateral, is what people call it sometimes.
Right.
It's just moving a mortgage from one property to another, right? And so when you get a mortgage or a deed of trust, it gets recorded somewhere and there's a legal description and it says, you know, lot one of, you know, Fairview Estates, right? And so when I do a mortgage, I try to make it walkable. I say, hey, whoever gives me a mortgage, I say to them, hey, if you'll give me this mortgage, I'm going, like, let's agree to make it movable, but only movable if I upgrade your position, right? So the collateral is going to be worth more, or I'm going to give them a little bit more money or a little bigger interest rate or extend the term or whatever. You got to make the deal better for the other person, right? And so I would have moved it from lot one, you know, to lot two, right? Let's say lot two has $100,000 more equity, right? Well, if you gave me that mortgage, that's a safer deal for you. So right. If I don't do what I say I'm going to do, that $100,000 is yours, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but in that scenario, I buy something, I'm essentially shopping for financing, really low, great financing, right? With payments that I like. And, you know, I'll buy something and then I'll fill it up and I'll sell it pretty quickly, hopefully. And then I'll move the financing to something else that I really want to buy, because I really don't want to buy office condos. That asset class doesn't really do much for me. Now, if I can take that and go buy a 10,000 square foot warehouse and have, you know, 3% interest that's non-recourse, right? And maybe it's interest only. So really my payments are really like 1% interest. Well, that's pretty good, you know? But I might bump it up for them. I might say, hey, let's do 5% interest. You know, it's a negotiation. That's all.
You have to make it worth their while. Where are you finding 3% interest rates right now? Not seller necessarily, from seller financing.
Yeah. So if you look around right now, nobody can make a deal pencil, right? And everybody on Twitter is whining that they can't make a deal pencil, but that's because they don't know how to make a deal and they're a crybaby. Yeah. I'm looking at you, everyone. So sellers are worried, right? Because they're like, oh, I can't get, you know, 2021 pricing. Oh, that's sad too for me, right? And so what I'm doing right now is I'm going to make deals with people who have an inflated value of their asset, which is 80 or 90% of deals out there. And I say to them, okay, I'm willing to pay something close to that price potentially, but you've got to give me better financing than I could get at a bank. Mm-hmm. The only way I'm going to do it. And so that's how I make a deal with them. And I try to get walkable financing and I try to get good terms, right? Yeah. And then maybe we can make a deal because basis doesn't really matter to me as much. I know it matters to everyone else in the world, but I'm a weirdo.
Why does it matter to you as much?
Well, so I'm not an institutional person, as you can probably tell, just by how I talk. So it doesn't matter to me as much because typically I've got, you know, one other person in a deal, maybe two other people in a deal, right? And I'm happy to buy high because if I buy high and I sell, right, I'm not taxed as much because if my basis is high, I'm not taxed as much. So that's good, right? What's bad is that everybody's like, wow, but you didn't make as much money. But a lot of times what I do is if I sell, I've usually got an option to buy it back. And usually I've got an option to buy it back at a pretty good basis. So what people don't realize is, hey, if you just think about selling for less, which people can't figure out, and buying back in for cheaper, then, you know, that then your basis changes, right? And it doesn't really matter. So
wait a second. I'm trying to wrap my head around this. So if you go about selling a property to someone with an option to buy it back for them for cheaper than you sold it.
Well, you might do it for cheaper. You might do it for more. You might do it for the same amount. It just depends, right? So the thing is that, how do I explain this? I do this with people that are real estate professionals, right? So I might do this and I might sell at my basis, right? And I might get an option to buy back at my basis, right? But that might be because my depreciation is gone, right? So let's say I've used up all my depreciation. I don't have anything left. I might go buy someone else's property and start my new depreciation schedule with my people. And then I still got a chance to buy this back, right? And for the same price I had, but I might do that, you know, I might do that 10 years later. And the price is probably, you know, appreciation happens.
Right.
I mean, rent growth happens. So it might be a really good deal by then. You got to be heavy enough to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's not a young man's game. Probably it's probably an older man's game.
Could be. I mean, that makes sense. But I'm just trying to wrap my head around, why would someone buy something with an option to sell it back? Like, what are they gaining from that?
Income.
They're gaining income.
Yeah. So if I got a pretty good deal, right? And I sold to you, Yona, right? And, you know, you or I, one of us fixed up the property or raised the rents, right? Or fixed the problem, right? There's a good likelihood that the property's making more income, right? And so essentially, you know, if I sell it to you, you're more renting the property, right? But it's now it's super safe, right? Right. So, you know, you wouldn't be unhappy to get 10 years of income and sell it back to me on a really safe deal if you needed to put your money somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I could go ahead and sell it to someone else also.
Right. But we'd work out that deal ahead of time.
Right. So. I hear. Okay. I mean, that's fair. Obviously, there's got to be something in it for them also at the beginning that they'd be willing to do to sign that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense. That's all comes back to negotiation. Have you picked up a lot of this just from doing deals, or have you, you know, were there any like courses or books or anything that you've kind of come across that have just really helped you along the negotiation path?
Yeah. Jack Miller's stuff. He's a guy out of Tampa. He ran with a bunch of different guys, but Jack Miller's stuff, I don't know if you want me to say a website, but his stuff's amazing. It's at cashflowdepot.com. But he ran around with a couple guys, a mentor of mine, Jack Shea. He's still alive. He's like the oldest 1031 exchanger in Florida. John Schaub, who that's where you should start. Start with John Schaub. A guy named Peter Fortunato, who's out of St. Petersburg. He's still alive and kicking. You talk about a deal maker that'll make your head spin, Peter Fortunato. And then a guy named Jimmy Napier. And there's some other people around them, but they put out, I don't know, in the 80s and 90s, they did courses and seminars and everything else. Most of their stuff is pretty cheap. I just read up on that. And I'm really not that smart. I stole everything I'm talking about from them. So.
But that's amazing. I mean, it really is, because there's so much, especially people who were doing deals, you know, in the 80s and 90s or 70s, or even before. These were people that obviously they had to have creative financing solutions because financing from banks was like at an all-time high at that point. Right. We're talking like, you know, 10, 12, 15%, you know, interest. You had to figure out ways to do deals.
Sure. Yeah. And you had to get creative, you know? And so, you know, something like, well, let's say there's a high price property now, you know, maybe you say to them, okay, I'll do your price, but, you know, I'll give you half cash and a note, right? And again, maybe you bought that at a note at a big discount, right? So yeah, they might not give you any discount, but you might get 20 or 30% off just by doing that move, right?
Sure. And that's, I guess, a great way to have collateral. I mean, great, just kind of speaks to your point earlier, just having those options, right? Meaning having notes, having deals that you buy at discounts just for collateral for potential other deals.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, and it's a way to get the deal, you know, it's a way to get the deal done. Nobody's phone, no seller's phone is ringing off the hook right now. Brokers are hurting, you know? And so like my deal is, hey, let's find a way to do it. You know, the goal is to get a transaction, not, you know, not to not have a transaction. So
yeah. Makes sense. Well, Casey, now has come the time for what I like to call the final four. These are four questions I ask all my guests. First question to you is, what's a book you've read that's given you a paradigm shift?
Yeah, Advanced Real Estate Options by Jack Miller. I was, I don't know, 7, 8 years into my real estate career, doing really well, making a lot of money. I read that and it blew my hair back, blew my skirt up. It was tremendous. Totally changed the way I transact. So there you go.
There you go. We'll make sure to put that in the notes. And it's literally a first time that book has ever been mentioned on the show. So we're going to put that in the show notes and hopefully that will expand these ideas across the world. Well,
and real estate options, you know, we didn't say this, but they solve so many problems. They solve timing problems. They can solve, you know, EPA issues. Don't buy it, option it, right? Like there's just so many problem-solving opportunities that options take care of. So that's really why I like the book. I like huge leverage with very little risk, which probably none of your watchers and listeners want anything to do with, I'm sure. So if you like that, go find out about options.
Okay. Well, I'm fascinated by it. I've learned a lot already from you in this episode and really curious to check out the book. So I appreciate that. Second questions. Sorry, I skipped the first question.
Oh, okay.
That's which was, what was the worst job that you ever had?
Oh, yeah. I had a Fortune 500 corporate job, and I'll never forget this. Like, my first day I went in, and they're like, hey, you've got to answer the phones. I was in the marketing department. They're like, hey, you've got to answer the phone all day. I said, okay, that's no problem. I'll answer the phone. And, like, I remember I got up to go to the bathroom, and my boss said to me, no, you need to tell me before you go to the bathroom. And I was like, I don't think this is going to work out. Like,
what?
I'm not in jail, right? But I felt like I was.
So, you need to raise your hand and get permission.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like back to elementary school.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't sound fun to me. Wow. Okay. I'm sure you didn't last very long there.
No.
Not very long.
I just a litany of jobs that I have failed at. So, yeah, until I found real estate. So,
well, good for you. I'm glad you did. So we're skipping the second, which we got to the second question. I hope maybe we'll put this out of order. But third question I'd like to ask is, what's a skill or talent that you'd like to learn?
Yeah. So I'm working on right now learning about 1031 exchanging. A couple friends of mine, Philip and Jason, have been showing me the wild and woolly world of 1031 exchangers. So I don't know if you know about this, Yona, but there's groups, right, that get together and they just exchange properties, right? Like I went to a group in South Carolina recently, right? And so there's a guy or a gal at the front, they're the MC, right? And they're like, you got a deal, you got a deal, you got a deal, you got a deal. Okay, who's first? You know, the first person stands up and says, hey, I got a piece of land, you know, it's here. I'm asking this much money for it. You know, I'm looking for, you know, a note or an option, or I'm looking for more cash flow, or, you know, whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. And then everybody else in the room goes around, you know, as they'll raise their hand and say, hey, you know, I've got something. And, you know, they basically work out a deal. It's real estate cocaine is what I call it.
Interesting. Deal making in the room. We actually had Ben Koget on the show a while back, who goes to a lot of these shows as well. He's based in Austin, Texas, and he does a lot of these shows also. I am familiar with it, but I know there's a lot of different groups doing the kind of thing, but it's incredibly fascinating to me.
Yeah. So I'm kind of just a transaction monkey. So being able to sit in a room and just make, you know, five deals in a couple hours, it, like, okay, I'll do that all day. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Well, especially when you have more to bring to the table, right? And more to offer.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't know if I have more to offer, but we'll see.
Little by little, that's how you do it. You exchange up, you know, you exchange one thing for the other. That's pretty awesome. Pretty cool. Okay. And fourth and final question, what does success mean to you, Casey?
An open calendar.
Open calendar.
Yeah.
Just do whatever you want, when you want.
Yeah, basically. Like, you know, and I can't do that all the time. In the last couple of years, opened up a business that takes up, you know, a fair amount of my time now. But, you know, when somebody says, hey, you know, can you meet me or can you talk to me or whatever? Like, if you've got an open calendar, that to me says that you've done all right in life and, you know, and the world is your oyster. So, yeah, an open calendar.
Well, there you go. That's a pretty good definition there. Yeah. Well, Casey, where can our listeners find you or reach out to you if they want to?
Twitter is probably the only place. I'm at Casey Miracle. So that's CaseyMericle. So yeah, if you want to chat with me, yeah, get on Twitter, hit me up in the DMs. I love talking about deals. So if you got a deal you can't figure out, give me a buzz. I've probably got a shot at solving the problem. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'm very grateful to you for taking the time today. And I definitely enjoyed this. I'm sure our listeners got a lot out of this because I certainly did. And really awesome that, you know, we finally got some Twitter action going on the Weiss Advice podcast. So excited for that.
I'm fired up about it. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Pleasure is mine. And to our listeners, you guys are awesome. Thank you for joining us once again, all the way to the end. And remember, until next time, the best advice comes only when you ask. Real quick, I have one question for you. Did you like this episode? If you did, I want to ask you a huge favor. See, the biggest thing that helps this podcast grow and that will spread this message to the whole world is that if you leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to the podcast. What that does is it basically tells the platforms that this podcast is out on is that you like my stuff and I'm doing something right. So take a few seconds out of your day, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating or review. I would be extremely grateful. Also, I want to hear from you guys. So I want to hear some feedback. If you have any questions for future episodes, please find me on LinkedIn, send me a DM, a connection request, Yona Weiss, and I'd love to hear from you.